Sites. I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and you are tuned into WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features Afro-Colombians and the Petro administration 3 years on. Africa Now is next. Welcome to Shaw Muiza Muntali. The music in the background is Rumba Chonta by Grupo Bahia. Next month on August 7, Colombia's president Gustavo Petro would have been in power for 3 years. When Gustavo Petro was elected on June 19, 2022, it was under the historic pact ticket of himself and Francia Marquez. Gustavo Petro was the first leftist to be elected president, and Francia Marquez was the first Afro-Colombian to be voted into the office of vice president in Colombia's history. Lawyer, Afro-Colombian, human rights, and environmental activist Francia Marquez was also the second woman to be elected to the vice president's office. The high voter turnout in Colombia's Pacific coast was key to the historic victory of Gustavo Petro. The Pacific coast is heavily populated by the often marginalized Afro-descendant and indigenous communities. Today, the show features activist Marina Cordoba reflecting on the challenges, effectiveness, and more of the Petro government 3 years on, particularly as it pertains to dealing with issues affecting Afro-Colombians. Marina Cordoba Brio is president of the National Association for Displaced Afro-Colombians, known by its acronym AFRODES. Marina Cordoba is a former union organizer. He also worked on the constitutional changes in 1991 that recognized Afro-Colombians as one of the minority communities, which led to Law 70 in 1993. Law 70 in 1993 recognized Afro-Colombians' rights over their collective land, natural resources, minerals, and their environment, and political participation rights in the Congress. Here is my discussion yesterday with Marina Cordoba. Marina Cordoba Brio, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Misha.
Thanks, and it's been a while since we spoke. I think it's almost 3 years, I guess, since we last spoke. It was around the time of the election of Petro, Gustavo Petro, and also Francia Marquez. And I wanted to start there Marina, if you can talk to us about the atmosphere in Colombia, what it was like 3 years ago when Gustavo Petro became president, with Francia Marquez becoming the first Afro-Colombian vice president in Colombia's history. If you could tell us the atmosphere at that time.
Thank you, Misha, for inviting me to be part of this program. Well, let me say that 3 years ago, before Gustavo Petro and Francia Marquez assumed the presidency of Colombia, the public order situation in Colombia faced several challenges, although there was also progress in certain areas. For example, one of the big issues that have been affecting Colombia is the armed conflict and violence. In this part, there was a peace process with the guerrilla, the most important guerrilla of Colombia, FARC. the peace process make significant progress since the peace was signed in 2016. Some dissidents group and criminal organization that there was a peace agreement, they remain active in various regions of the country, generating displacement and threat to local communities. But the Duque administration that was previous to Petro's administration, he said that he would tear up the peace agreement. And this has led to the current administration of President Gustavo Petro finding armed groups with a greater presence in almost the entire country, affecting the Afro-Colombian, campesino, and indigenous community the most. But also, there were protests and social mobilization. The Colombia population demonstrate a big the mobilization in the country. Because they have been experienced several social issues, many of them related to disagreement with the certain government policies of President Duque's administration. These social mobilization were centered on social inequalities and the increase in armed violence by illegal groups. The social mobilization also demand better working condition, healthcare reform, and better living condition for, especially for those community living in the middle of the conflict. Now, regarding to the presence of the legal armed groups, such as the ELN and other dissident group, continue to be a risk for the several regions of the country, affecting the security and the rural and ethnic community, generating threat, murders, displacement, and other affectation to the social community. On the president Petro's and Francia's government, he launched the total peace, La Paz Total. That was an initiative to achieve peace with armed groups in Colombia, those who has been missed, they were back to fight when on the Duque administration. And he called everybody to the table to talk about peace and how to achieve. He started with the ELN, with the FARC dissidents, and also with the paramilitaries. He started negotiation with all of them. I think that they had some missed results so far. Progress has been made in dialogue with a negotiation with some groups, but challenges persist, such as the persistence of the violence and difficulties in trying to, you know, to achieve progress. And also some of the groups, they have been renuent. They don't want to negotiate to achieve peace. They wanted to continue doing business because this group are now doing business with trafficking, drugs, mine, and having control of some areas of Colombia. So this is one of the big challenges for this administration right now. But I think that for the for the other side, they have been trying to mobilize the social population to pass a social reform, such as healthcare, worker rights, and some others to improve the condition of the worker and communities all around the country. It's not easy. There have been a lot of opposition from the statement, from the Congress. They oppose every proposals that is going to benefit the social and the more poor people in Colombia. They oppose to support it. But I think that it's a government that is stand to support the poor people in Colombia. Believe me, it's not easy to achieve change in 4 years when you have people living all their life in middle of difficulties, war, and now to achieve in 4 years is difficult. But the most important is to have a government that is backing, is supporting the people who need the most. And this government has been working on that direction.
So you're saying that the mood at that time when 2022, when people saw this new government come in, because of course, Gustavo Petro was is a left of center, is a the first leftist really, more solidly leftist president to take to come into power. And then of course you have Francine Marquez, who as the first Afro-Colombian vice president and the second woman president, and also being an activist. You saw that mood at that time, and was, you know, people are looking that, oh yeah, this is a great change. And you think the mood now is still that they're still giving the government somewhat of a benefit of that, even though there's some difficulties, they're still giving the government benefit of the doubt that they are trying to have some positive change.
Yes, they have been some achievement, important achievement right now, like there is a law that is going to improve the worker rights. It was received, you know, it's a few months ago that Congress was forced, because the social mobilization forced the Colombia Congress to approve the reform. And there is also a health reform that has been on the pressure of the social mobilization. So the Congress is moving forward with that. It's not, you know, easy, because the Colombia Congress, the right the win right is the majority of the member of the Congress.
Right wing.
No,
no, no, no.
They oppose everything the Petro administration is trying to push or to present to them in favor of the poor people in Colombia. You know, there are some challenges that this government has been facing, but the most important is the government is there to support the poor people. It's not in favor of the rich people in Colombia, and this is why they don't like Petro. They don't like Francia. But as you know, it's a democracy. The people are now acknowledging the importance to have a government that defend rights for the poor and workers, and that we are moving now in that direction.
And as you said, it's very tough. I was just looking at an article that appeared a few months ago in May on the Agence France-Presse, and it quotes Francia Márquez. She was at the Afro-Colombian Day, which marks the abolition of slavery. That's on May 21st. And she said the role of vice president has not been easy. It hasn't been an easy task to govern in a country that has a racial state, that has a government that practices racism and patriarchy. Do you think from what she is saying, do you think she underestimated the challenges that she would face when she took over, when they took over 3 years ago?
Well, you know, for us, Francia Márquez arrived as a vice president of Colombia has generated great impact and celebration. She is the first woman of Afro descendants to hold this position in Colombia. Her background and origins come from mining activities in Afro-Colombian leaders fighting to protect the human rights environment. She has raised an expectation about her ability to represent and defend the rights of any in rural community. That is not easy. It's not easy because we are, you know, for Black people in Colombia and all around the world, I believe Francia Márquez's arrival as president, as vice president, is a significant event that represent a step forward in inclusion and diversity in Colombia. With high expectation, but it's not easy for change to be achieved in 4 years of administration in the face of a population that have been plagued by needs, forgotten, and had lived in poverty, in war their entire life. And also discrimination issues. The first time that we had a lot, it's a good representation of the Black people in this government. It's some, you know, high position, it's a small position on the government, but I think that this is important. But the discrimination of seeing a Black woman in power come from people who they don't believe that the black people have rights to be there. They oppose to what she is, you know, want to do it, but also they made the stereotypes about her. But I think that this, you know, is how we is, you know, started to build a knowledge in the country that people can understand that we are also part of this society, and is we have been in affected by wars. We have been doing activities to support our rights and be there in power is something important to bring knowledge and to have a, you know, a port to the construction of a better society without discrimination and equality rights for everybody. So this is what I believe she was mentioned in the article that you mentioned, you just referred, because it's not easy to become a vice president like her, and most people in Colombia wanted to be there, but they don't want to have somebody, black people over there. But I think that she has been doing a good job. It's not easy also inside of the government, but she has been doing a good job, especially to be there. It's important for us. Now we have to, she opened the door, and I think that we have to push to have some other people, black people, women, men, to continue that process. And we are working hard to make sure that somebody else is coming to replace her.
Again, that's Marino Cordoba. He is the president of the National Association of Displaced Afro-Colombians, AfroDes. He's a longtime Afro-Colombian activist, and we're looking at the situation in Colombia, Afro-Colombians and the Petro administration 3 years on. And also, as you're talking, I wanted to also, if you could expand a bit more on some of the deeply entrenched structural racism which the vice president was talking about, and also just if you can expand also on, you mentioned about her coming to power, how it affected Afro-Colombians, and how people still view her today 3 years on within the community, Afro-Colombian community particularly.
I think that the political situation in Colombia now under Gustavo's presidency is the atmosphere different of the same now. The political situation in this process, the traditional political class, we has been a step in privilege, resistance, and refuse to accept that those who have been historically excluded have right. In that direction, I think that the Petro administration, in France, Mark administration, they have been marked by the opposition from political establishments that limited what they wanted to achieve for the people, with intense debate about policies and social reform. especially in the areas of the economy, labor rights, and health and safety. The Petro administration have promised citizens' participation. I think that this is one of the most important issues for this administration of the Petro in Francia. They have been asking to, citizens to participate in social mobilization to support the rise. And people go out and protest in support the reform. And that successfully mobilization of the population in support of the right is something important that has rise in the country and has been like the key, the most important key now to push the establishment, especially the Colombia Congress, to pass reform in favor of the poor people. It's important to highlight that today, under Petro administration, the human rights of those who mobilize, both in support of the government's social reform and those who mobilize against them, are respected. Before, that situation was not easy for those who go out to protest, because the police was authorized by the Duque administration to go against the people who was exercising the rights. Today, what we can say is, if there is mobilization supporting the government or mobilization against the government, both are respected. The police is there to make sure that everybody is respected. And I think that this is an important change in the behavior of the police and also in respect of the human rights in Colombia. So it's issues that make a example for some other country where people want to mobilize, they want to protest, but the police go against them. In Colombia, this is the big change to guarantee the rights of everybody. And also, the violence in Colombia is still high. Most people can speak out now what they wanted to do, to speak, and there is no opposition and there is no persecution against those who express the ideas. Except one of the pre-candidates that was attended 2 months ago. But there is mobilization of the police, the authority now trying to investigate what happened. But I think that the human rights situation in Colombia is better now than the other governments, previous government. They don't care about the human rights, and now there is more protection. Although there is some leaders who have been killed, and still the FARC member who signed the peace agreement has been still being killed. The violence in the region is high. I think that the situation for me today is a better than in previous governments before.
as the Gustavo Petro government in Colombia reaches 3 years in its tenure, activist Marino Cordoba is reflecting on the challenges, effectiveness of the government, and particularly looking as it pertains to dealing with issues affecting Afro-Colombians. Marino Cordoba Brio is president of the National Association of Displaced Afro-Colombians, also known by its acronym AFRODES. The music in the background is The Awakening by Ahmad Jamal, and we play that remembering his birthday, which was on July 2nd. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW, 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now back to the conversation. But you still say that the situation in terms of violence is better than before, but there's still, you're still seeing violence against the human rights defenders, and also particularly in the community of people of African descent, as well as indigenous people. I think there was an incident in some months ago, a few months ago, there was in Benaventura, the port city of Benaventura, where armed groups had deeply affected that community. How did that impact the Afro community, Afro-Colombian community there, that type of violence? As I wanted you to expand a bit on what you were talking about, the violence and how it's affected, and also, because you also have the paramilitary groups, how active are they still, together with these urban illegal gangs?
Total peace launched by President Gustavo Petro is one of the initiatives to achieve peace with our groups in Colombia. He was trying to bring everybody to the table. Progress has been made with some of them. Some others, they refused to continue the dialogue, and they went back to the jungle to continue fighting, and they are still fighting between them and also against the government, and have been causing a lot of affectation, assassination, displacement, massacres against the communities in some region of the country. For example, the dialogue table with the ELM and the FARC dissidents in some.
If you could explain the abbreviation of ELM.
The ELN is, I think, the second guerrillas after the FARC that remain still in Colombia. They have some control in some places, region of Colombia. This is the national force of Colombia. I don't know how to explain it in English, but in Spanish, Ejército Nacional de Liberación, Nacional
movement.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but I think that they lose a very important opportunity to negotiate the peace with this government that was open to all these groups to achieve peace in Colombia. And they went back. Most people in Colombia say because they wanted to do business with trafficking drugs, mining and, you know, kidnapping people. So they wanted to make money. They don't care about peace in Colombia. This is what most of the people said that is happening with the ELN. And also some of their far dissidents and some of the paramilitary group. Although this government maintain the negotiation with this group, there is some other group, it's a small group in the cities, just like you mentioned in Buenaventura. There is some bands, criminal groups. They are fighting between them and affecting the community because they have they are receiving money from trafficking drugs. So this is what most of these groups have been doing is business. And that doing business is affecting people because they have the control of some regions where the drugs have been is moving, you know. So it's a shame to have to say that, but this is no, they don't care about people. They don't want to, they don't care about justice. They just care about business. So despite this efforts, violence continue in many regions, the murders, forced displacement, and other crime is really affecting. We still, as an Afro-Colombian, we still support the Colombia government with this efforts to total peace. Because this is what we really wanted to persist into calling this group to come to the table to find an agreement and to finish this affectation to the social population. But it's still, you know, it's still going on.
Yeah, and I wanted to correct myself when we said that it's the ELN, which is the National Liberation Army.
Exactly, the National Liberation Army.
In English, yeah, for those of us who are Spanish challenged. And and I wanted also to continue what you're saying, some of the things that you had expectations. I wanted to find out of the government when they took over 3 years ago, what was some of the expectations, apart from the government pushing for the peace process, for total peace, because Afro-Colombians and indigenous people have been disproportionately affected by the violence in the conflict, disproportionately affected by that. What were some of the expectations that people like yourself in the Afro-descendant and the indigenous activist community had, and what changes did you want the government to start tackling when they first came to being a few years ago, and this new government came to being in 2022?
Well, we come from a difficult times in Colombia. You know, the violence in our regions, discrimination, no participation in the government decision, the investment of the Colombia government went most to the rich people and rich region of Colombia. Our expectation with this Petro administration and other administration who might be, you know, supporting community is to improve our condition. We need highways where our community can mobilize, you know, transportation of the goods and some other benefits for our community that is in hand of the government. All our expectation is how to protect human rights, how to guarantee rights for our community, how to achieve peace in a region or in a country where the wars, assassination, massacres, displacement is the common goal. And, you know, there have been happening without the Colombia's previous administration care about that. I think that this administration now is more in favor of the human rights issues, in favor to bring justice to the regions where people are affected by poverty, exclusion, war. So it's something that we really wanted to have in our region. But just like I said, 4 years is not enough to make change in order of the needs of the community. We are still fighting, we are still mobilizing, we are still educating other people to understand that we need to be together in order to have a government that care for everybody, for the rich people, for the businessmen, for the poor people, for the Afro-Colombian, for indigenous, for the workers, for everybody, not only for one sector of the society. It's for everybody who, because this is, we understand that this is a democracy, but also we understand that the government need to be there for those who need the most. And we are still, we have still big challenges ahead in order to mobilize, educate people around that. But it's part of our work, and we continue doing this.
And what areas in dealing with structural racism, for instance, in Colombia, has the government not been effective in dealing with in the past 3 years? Where do you want them to do better in that struggle, especially you as an activist in the Afro-descendant community?
Well, there is I have to recognize that the willing of this government to achieve progress in our region is there. It has been since the beginning, but the opposition of the Colombia government, the Colombia Congress, is one of the big challenges in order to facilitate the tools to the Colombia government to implement. For example, the Colombia government try to pass a law to increase the budget to support the programs in the regions of the Afro-Colombian indigenous and campesinos. You know, we programs like highways, better education infrastructure, programs to food for the people in the region that need to cultivate agricultural programs. All these programs are needed in our region in order to provide food for our people, but also very good communication highways that can facilitate the community to transportation of the goods. Some regions they had no communication, aquatic communication, and also they had no highways. People are struggling to go to the communities and also to bring their production, the agriculture production to the cities to provide food to the people. So these areas are the most important, and I think the government need to invest to improve that situation. Other situation, and that will stop the cultivation of coke, and stop also the trafficking of drugs. Because if the campesinos communities who live in that area where the coke cultivation is growing up, they have something else to do. They will not, spend time cultivating coca making coke cultivation. And they are doing this because the coca cultivation is most important, generate more money than cultivate, some other goods. So this is what I think that the Colombia government need to focus now in trying to leave some benefits for our community. This government has been good, doing good, in creating education programs for youth, giving them a scholarship to go to university. I think that this is very important because most of the youth people have been recruited by our group to kill other people. So we wanted to stop that. In order to stop that, it's not taking them to jail, but giving them opportunity to do something else. And also other good programs is a returning lamb. For those who lost the lamb because they were displaced or they were
this
killed.
The land, you're talking about land reform?
Land reform, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Land reform for those who they lost the territory, the lamb, because they were displaced. Or because there was a business owner who came to the community and take over the lamb of this community. So this government has been doing good in that, and also giving, territories, land for cultivation, agricultural cultivation for those people who need the most. I think there is some other program, but this that I just mentioned, this is something that's very important for the community, especially the education for youth people, and also initiative or programs like job for them. It's important to finish a war in Colombia that had a epicenter, or is more for the our group on the youth people who have been recruited to serve for those who are the leaders of the groups, not because they receive money. The youth people receive money to be part of that. The only thing that they receive is to be killed, or they can kill somebody else. But the owner or the leaders of those groups, they are not on the front line of the confrontation. They are leading, but the who have been killed or who died in this process is the youth people that had no, they just came there because they wanted to improve their life. You know, they lied to them to engage them to be part of the group.
Marino, thank you very much for being on the show. And also, again, I hope you get better. I know you came on the show with some ailment. So thanks a lot for doing that for us as well.
All right, Musa, thank you. I wanted just to add some, it's a small thing that important that you mentioned our conversation at the beginning. You know, what was the message for some of the U.S. residents about the Colombia? I wanted to mention, you know, very quick, some of the important issues. It's important to maintain awareness of the country's social and political situation.
You just been listening to a portion of a conversation with activist Marina Cordoba. In the conversation, Marina Cordoba was reflecting on the challenges, effectiveness, and more of the Gustavo Petro government in Colombia as it turns 3 years old, particularly as it pertains to dealing with issues affecting Afro-Colombians. Marina Cordoba Brio is president of the National Association of Displaced Afro-Colombians, also known by its acronym AFRODES. The full conversation will be available on African Now's SoundCloud page. That's African Now online on SoundCloud. The music in the background is Mandela Bay by Jonathan Butler. And we play that to remembering Nelson Mandela's birthday, which is July 18. That's it for African Now for today. I'm your host, Muiza Muntali. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shaanana with Zain Al-Amin, which looks at issues in Northern Africa and the Middle East, particularly focusing on the plight of Palestinians. And also after that is Sophie's Parlor, the Women's Collective, which is followed by The Browder File with Tony Browder. And that's followed by Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly, which is followed by Combit La Kai with Eugenia Charles, looking at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter, that's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope, and thanks to our engineers Michael Nicella and Kalia Chapman. Also, thanks to our research fellow volunteers Chanda Koza and Fonan Gonda, and our Africa World Now Project Collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erdison. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW. And thank you for joining us. I'll continue to support all the great programs on WPFW. We're going to leave you with a closing song entitled Mia Benaventura by Grupo Baya. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week and stay safe.
Tus mañanas son tan bellas y puras como el cristal.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnestad.
Today, Senate Republicans will press ahead with a terrible bill that guts local news, defunds rural radio stations, and makes America less safe on the world stage.
The Senate is convened for the day and will begin debate on H.R. 4, a bill to rescind some $9.4 billion in funding for foreign aid and public media, gutting the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, putting the future of some 1,500 local community and public radio stations at risk. Senate Minority Leader Democrat Chuck Schumer blasted blind Republican support for the bill and says Democrats will introduce amendments to mitigate the worst impacts.
They're doing it all to continue funding tax breaks for billionaires. And do you want to know the most galling part of this whole bill that Republicans are hell-bent in dramming through? They have absolutely no idea how OMB plans to apply the cuts. How can we devastate programs, rip away bipartisan funding, and impact millions of Americans without even knowing how this bill will be implemented?
Senate leader Republican John Thune of South Dakota hailed the legislation.
Reining in waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government is a priority shared by President Trump and by Senate Republicans.
Three Republicans voted against moving the bill to debate: Alaska Republican Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins of Maine, and Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. Vice President J.D. Vance was the tie-breaking vote to allow the bill to proceed, indicating there is enough support to pass the bill out of the Senate. It would go back to the House before reaching the president's desk. The deadline is Friday. Wisconsin Democrat Tammy Baldwin spoke of what's at stake for cuts to TV and radio stations.
Wisconsin Public Radio is the primary broadcast relay for Wisconsin's emergency alert system, including amber alerts and life-saving weather alerts like tornado and flash flood warnings. Look no further than the absolutely devastating news out of Texas. Access to high-quality information can truly be the difference between life and death.
Of the foreign aid cuts to be scrapped in the Senate version, PrEPFAR, a program hailed by President George Bush to provide HIV medication to Africa. It's credited with saving millions of lives. A study by UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health last month said cuts in foreign aid to USAID could lead to more than 14 million deaths around the world, including 4.5 million children under the age of 5 by the year 2030. The Trump administration says it's ending the deployment of 2,000 National Guard troops in Los Angeles, withdrawing about half the 4,000 stationed in L.A. to aid in the president's mass deportation agenda. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass hailed it as a victory.
This is an example of what happens when Angelenos stick together. So the Trump administration, they got the message. They are withdrawing 50% of the National Guard troops who should have never been sent here in the first place. But now that they're leaving, I certainly hope that they are going home and not that they're being deployed to another city. We need to stop this.
700 Marines will also remain. The deployment began in early June and was slated to last 60 days. The Trump administration says it sent 5 men to the small African nation of Eswatini after the Supreme Court lifted restrictions on sending immigrants to third countries they have no ties to. The U.S. had already deported 8 men to South Sudan after the high court ruling. In Gaza, at least 20 Palestinians were killed in a crush seeking aid at a Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid distribution site after Israeli forces fired tear gas and chemical agents into the crowd, according to Gaza health officials. The GHF blamed agitators and said it found a gun and other weapons for the first time since opening. Israel's blamed Hamas for deaths at the site. The UN Human Rights